A couple of years ago, I got an angry letter from a woman in Los Angeles about an article I'd written about bilingual education and language policy in the New York Times. She told how her father had immigrated from Hungary when he was 10 and had gone into an English language school where he didn't understand a word. Still, he'd worked hard and learned English. But now she went to her daughter's school and saw Hispanic children taking all their subjects in Spanish. And as she put it, don't they know this is America? She went on at some length, and she somehow managed to get Fernando Valenzuela into her argument, but that was her drift. I recalled the letter as I was reading a new book by Washington journalist James Crawford called simply Bilingual Education from Crane Press. It's the fascinating story of how an academic debate over educational methods spilled over into a heated political controversy. It's understandable that people should find the theory behind bilingual education a little odd. If we want to bring non-English speaking youngsters into the mainstream, shouldn't they go into English language classrooms as soon as possible, the way previous generations of immigrants did? But as Crawford observes, it wasn't quite like that. In the first place, bilingual education used to be pretty common. At the turn of the century, more than 500,000 American children were receiving all or part of their instruction in German alone. And for immigrant children who were made to sink or swim, the attrition was fearsome. In 1908, the dropout rates for non-English-speaking children in English-language schools ran close to 90%. Bilingual education was reintroduced in the 1960s as a way of dealing with the children of the new influx of immigrants, most of them Asian and Hispanic. Instead of going straight into English language classrooms, kids get instruction in content subjects like math in their native language while they're learning English as a second language. But the point of that instruction is to facilitate their transition to the English language track. It's clear that you pick up a language more quickly if you know something about the subject matter. If you've already learned arithmetic in Spanish or Cantonese, you have a better shot at being able to figure out what words like minus or equal mean when you hear them in an English language classroom. Bilingual education was not particularly controversial when it was first proposed. Congressman George Bush sponsored one of the early bilingual education bills in 1967, and 6 years later, Governor Ronald Reagan approved California's first bilingual education measure. But beginning in the late 1970s, conservatives began to see the programs as a kind of affirmative action, or affirmative ethnicity, as one of them called it. Critics like Education Secretary William Bennett and Senator Dan Quayle charged that the method was really aimed at maintaining ethnic identity at the expense of assimilation. One Department of Education official described the programs as the new Latin hustle. This polarization of the issue has colored the way people evaluate the programs. The conservatives say that bilingual education has been tried and doesn't work. The liberals say that it does. Crawford concludes that it depends which programs you look at. The method seems to be highly effective when it's done right, with strong local support and trained teachers who are fluent in the language of the students. But it's often hard to find competent teachers, particularly for more exotic languages, not surprising given the overall level of American foreign language skills. As a result, a lot of programs are bilingual in name only. Right now, there are more than 600,000 students in California alone who speak little or no English. That's about 1 in 6. It's going to take a massive commitment of resources and ingenuity to help them move into the social and economic mainstream. We can't afford to let them be made the hostages of ideology.